This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I am Master Ace.
What up?
What's going on?
This is a really long time coming.
I know. What's taking it so long? Finally connected the dots, I guess.
Various people's travels, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it.
So, am I the guilty party here?
No.
can't blame you all together.
Nobody's been in town. But yeah, I mean, I used to listen to you all the time.
Why do you mean used to? Why does it have to be past tense?
Because when I was like re-listening to like to Sitting on Chrome and Disposable Arts, I had like very distinct like middle school memories and college memories. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember when like this dude put me onto this song and like this girl put me onto this. And we used to listen to Take a Walk all the time.
Oh, that was a little bit later.
Yeah, and yeah. I used to listen to People in My Hood all the time.
That's pretty cool. That's a little bit later still. So yeah. you actually covering some good bases there with the albums.
You.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not kidding. It's just, I've been listening to your voice for a very long time, and it's an honor to finally meet you.
That's cool to hear. I need more female fans, so please spread the word.
Okay, I'll get on our hotline.
Yes.
That would be great if we had a phone tree, actually. We'll work on that. We do have a Facebook group, but
let them know.
What's a phone tree?
A phone tree? This is how I know you don't have kids, Ali. A phone tree is when, like, on a soccer team, you got to tell everybody that the game got canceled. So it's like I call you, and you call this other person, and that person calls the other person, and like that.
Got it.
I never heard of that either.
Seriously?
And I have a daughter, but that's good to know.
We'll institute one in case there's an emergency ever, a hip-hop emergency, which it seems there have been quite a few lately. Do you pay attention to all of this Twitter drama?
Oh, I'm definitely. I actually have no choice because the guys in my group, EMC, Wordsworth, Strickland, a few other Power Malos, he's our music director, Pearl Gates, the guy who collaborated with us, we're all on the same group text on WhatsApp. So anytime, as soon as something happens, drama, whatever, somebody's throwing it out there, and then you get five or six opinions, and then you gotta chime in. So I'm dragged into it no matter what.
But like privately?
Privately, yeah. I mean, my wife and I talk about stuff. Like she's definitely in the know, and we have good conversations about the stuff that goes on, and we give our opinions. Sometimes we butt heads on topics, but it's good, healthy, you know, conversations that hip hop needs. I mean, it's always been part of it. The drama's always been there. There's always been controversy. We're used to it. And for those that aren't, they probably haven't been in this long enough.
So care to publicly weigh in on the events of last week?
Well, a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah, a lot.
Drake was accused of not writing his rhymes, which... you know, I'm on the Drake side of that ledger.
What do you mean?
I mean that he's writing his rhymes. The fact that he brought somebody in to help him throw a couple of metaphors in it, I mean, I think that the game is changing a little bit where it's going to become acceptable. Every other genre of music, you have writers, like artists go out and find writers, good writers to come in. Hip-hop doesn't have that because we've been, you know, from that school of thought that if you're on the mic talking about how great you are and how dope you are and how nobody's as good as you, you have to be the one penning those lyrics. To me, Drake is a song maker. He makes good songs. He makes popular songs. He makes catchy songs. And it actually didn't shock me as much when I found out that there were people helping him, you know, formulate some of the lines because his output of popular music has been like unprecedented. Mm-hmm. Like you can, there's no artist you can name in hip hop all the way up till now that has had that many records on the radio at the same time that were good records, that were hit records, that were popular records. And, You know, I was starting to think he was a computer or a machine or something, the way he was cranking out these records. You know, I feel like, you know, it's a slippery slope when you start talking about having people come in and write and help write. Because I've worked with artists and helped artists write songs, but they haven't been artists that, like, there are artists that have people write for them. Like Bismarck E, great artist, great song maker, legend. His hit records, all his hit records, for the most part, were written by Big Daddy Kane. Mm-hmm. And that's like a known fact. That's not something that's debatable. It's never even been a topic. It's just a fact. You can look at his credits. It says written by Antonio Hardy or A. Hardy. It is what it is. And so...
But also, like, nobody could deliver those songs the way that he could. Like, he brings something.
He brings his character.
Yeah.
He brings his character. He brings his delivery, his voice. You know, he puts his own pronunciation of what Kane wrote, and he makes it his own. And I've actually collaborated in the studio with Will Smith. People don't really know that. He had an album. I think it was his sixth or seventh album. It was called Willennium. And we were in a writing session, myself, Will, a guy by the name of Kel Spencer, maybe one other writer. And the way it worked was the beat's playing, everybody's in their corner writing lines, trying to come up with cool metaphors, cool lines. And then it's like, okay, let me hear what you got. All right, I got such, 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 such. Ooh, I like that one line. Let me get that. Okay, that's dope. And then I got this. What you got? And then I like that line. Give me that line. And literally the verses were pieced together, mm-hmm. taking bits and pieces of what, not just, you know, what Will wrote, what I wrote, what Kel wrote, what the other writer wrote, and we formulated verses with bits and pieces of what everybody was doing. That's not the typical way stuff is done, but like I said, every other genre of music, this is acceptable. And maybe hip-hop's gonna grow up this year a little bit and allow that to be the case, but if you step into that room of okay, I have writers, you can't be talking about how dope you are and lyrically the best and all of that kind of stuff. Like, you have to be, if you're just making songs that make people dance and party, that's all good for me.
Right, but if you're selling like a first person story.
Yeah, or if you're talking about just, if you're spitting braggadocious, like, I'm gonna have a problem with that, because you can't say you're better than this dude and that dude, and nobody can mess with you if you didn't put all of that on paper yourself.
Okay, fair.
I think that's where the line is drawn for me as well. Like, if it's for entertainment, cool. But if it's about you are the master of your domain, then that's a problem for me.
Yep.
I would also have a problem if it were tales of bedroom prowess and conquest.
Okay.
I'm like, if that's four dudes combined output, okay.
Right.
Don't say it's just you.
That's okay, ladies. She's speaking for the ladies. I got you. I'm with you. It's not all true.
What else? Ghost versus Action.
Ooh. Pretty nasty. All right, well, I think that Action knows. He knew at the moment that he said what he said on that show that he made a mistake.
Yeah, he fucked up.
And it was like the words were coming out of his mouth, and he was like, "What am I saying?"
He's like, "I'm on TV."
Somebody stop,
no.
Rewind. Yeah. He let it go, and you know, it was clearly a mistake. He reveres Ghost. Ghost was his probably inspiration for doing what he does. And now he's in a position where the guy who he, you know, modeled himself after now is mad at him. And that's a tough spot to be in. I mean, it could potentially be career suicide, but I'm actually curious to see how the next month or so plays out. You know, Ghost, you know, made some pretty direct threats on his post about having the tour schedule and, you know, having guys ready to step to him and this kind of stuff. And We know the history of Wu-Tang Clan. They stepped to people before. You know, Joe Buttons had a problem for saying something about meth, and that was like really small. He just was said that meth shouldn't have been in the top 20 or whatever they were talking about. He said, "I'll wrap circles around meth," or whatever he said, but it wasn't anywhere near as incendiary as what, you know, Ghost straight up was like. I mean, I'm sorry, Action was straight up like, you know, Ghost ain't rhyming like this, like that. But I'm curious to see how it's going to pan out. I like Action. I think Action is a good artist. I like the stuff that he says. I like the stuff that he spits. It's funny. It's entertaining. His look is interesting. And I like Ghost as being Ghost. And I hear the similarity in their voices. I don't feel that they necessarily rhyme the same. I think people are caught up in the voice. You know, very similar to the artist Your Old Droog, who sounds voice-wise a lot like Nas. But when you look at the actual lyrics that are on paper, it's clear that he's not rhyming anywhere near the way Nas rhymes. So it's a voice thing. You know, the fans are ultimately going to decide Action's fate. If he has enough of a fan base that they're loyal enough to rock with him through this, because, you know, Ghost and Action are going to have some of the same fans, and probably a lot of the same fans. And so there are going to be certain fans that go like, "Oh, I ain't messing with Action no more because he just Ghost." And there's going to be fans that say, you know, "I'm still riding with Action. I'm still riding with Ghost." We'll see. It's time will tell. You know, what's that tour schedule? You have a copy? I want to see where I can look at where they're going to be close.
We can look it up on the internet.
I think, right?
I don't want to see that beard set on fire, though, personally. I mean, best case scenario, something about this pretty like petty incident inspires Ghost to like really lay it down.
He might go in the studio and just...
If he makes a full album that's just like over Teddy Pendergrass, I'll be the happiest girl alive. That would end all beef.
I just hope he doesn't waste all his bars talking about Action. I don't think that's the way to go.
Yeah, true.
Put it all in one song, get it out of your system, and then make a dope album.
Mm-hmm. What else happened? Who are your dudes, though?
I am a huge fan of Jay Electronica, who is another person on the list of come on with the album already.
Mm-hmm.
Like his music a lot, like what he's spitting. I like everything about him as an artist. He needs more output. You know, he had a great, you know, swell of momentum for a moment there, but now that's like 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah,
or maybe more now. It could be 4 years ago. And I understand that he's on Jay's label, and what I'm guessing is that they're trying to figure out a single. The kind of music that he's making isn't going to be he's not going to give them a radio driven record. It's not what he does, and they're struggling with that. They're trying to find something that's going to work on commercial radio, and I just don't think that he's going to be able to give them that. He's going to give them great songs, but it's not going to be what they're asking for. Who's to say that it won't still sell a lot of copies, though? That's the thing. Like, let's find out. Like, are they afraid to have a quote unquote failure? If it sells 500,000 copies, because I feel like he has at least a gold fan base right now if he does it right. Is that a failure now in today's game? I mean, as long as you don't spend $5 million on marketing and promotions, it could be a success. They got to let him stub his toe. They got to let him bump his head. Let him put out the records that he wants to put out and then see where it goes from there. See, the problem is labels are too scared now to even take a risk on the artist and let the artist be the artist. They want to hold your hand. They want to guide you. They want to bring other people in. They want to bring outsiders in to sort of show you what you need to do to get to this place. And I just want to hear Jay Electronica rhyme. That's all I want to hear.
Yeah, agreed. That's the thing that worries me about it becoming acceptable for there to be writers in hip hop. Are we going to go back to like pop rap, having that be all right, having that be a thing that labels put their money into rather than taking a risk on somebody or building somebody's career or like bringing somebody back from a difficult time?
I mean, even when there was pop rap, though, there was always good music right in the same line with it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, when MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice were tearing up the airwaves, we had Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul, and you know, there were solid artists making dope records that we loved regardless. Like, it was enough to sort of make us ignore what was happening on pop radio. So I'm not worried about that. We're going to have good music coming out.
Nope. Just you wait. Yo. Yeah, I heard of the boogeyman when I was a youth. Scary. Then I found out that he was as fake as a tooth fairy. Since my last mission, this nigga been ass kissing. I took a minute. I gave your single a fast listen. Tell me this. And no pot to pissing. How you dissing? Your group home's about to be reporting you missing. And now I don't know what was worse, the track or the verse. I'ma get to your producer, but I'm smacking you first. See, I couldn't even find one nigga that heard of you. I did find a few cats that wanted to murder you, but I told them chill. I let them know you was my son, and I promise I can pay and support to you 21. Consider me the clothes on your back and a warm meal. Who knows, this just might get you a deal. And the day your album go on sale for the first hour, just remember, like Nas, nigga, I gave you power. I figured I'd give you some help, cause you need lots. I make your producer change his name to Speed Knots. Tell him I said fuck him for doing the tracks. Matter of fact, fuck Fat Beats for doing the wax. I'ma diss you via email and then through a fax. I'ma diss you by two-way, I ain't gonna never relax. I'ma diss you over fast, slow track, or no track. If your shit wasn't so whack, I'd diss you to your track. You that little fish that I catch and I throw back. And by the way, get 50 Cent, his flow back. You that cat in the club to get hit with a bottle. Fucking with me, you better off trying to hit Lotto. And don't answer back, cause it's hard shit to follow. And you can't spit, nigga, so you obviously must swallow, motherfucker.
Pay homage, respect. Yo, yo, I got one lyric pointed at your head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry. Don't worry.
I get worried. I do get worried. Hey, Ali, are you going to make some music coming out? Make it happen.
I'm making music. I don't know what to call it, so I don't know. But yeah, that's a funny joke, Franny. Yeah, so it's coming out. I know you've been hearing for a minute, but I don't really talk about what I'm doing because you weave yourself into that commentary of, oh yeah, I'm doing something, and then it doesn't come out and people get bored or no longer, you know, they're not interested. So I don't talk about stuff I'm doing.
I know.
But
I'm like him.
When it's ready, then it's a conversation.
I get it. I know.
Yeah.
Just from a fan perspective, you know, we always want more and better. That's why we're here.
Yeah. Yeah, true, but you know, I've just never been of, my art has not been this assembly line sort of product, so I really care about what I put out, and probably more than the fans care at times, I think, I overcare, but I just know that the body of work has such a high standard that it's kind of like, in my own head, I need to at least match it, if not get over that. So that's the challenge.
Do you guys think that you share that a little bit? And do you think that might be something like related to when you came up?
I mean, it's definitely a different time. You know, the late 90s, early 2000s, we would hear artists say, well, we just went in the studio. We was in the studio for 3 weeks. We did 58 songs, and we're gonna pick the best 12. And I come from, and I think Ali does, come from a time where there was no throwaways. Like, every record you made was for the album. There was not a lot of stuff left over when you finished recording, because everything that you made for a reason, and you wanted it to be on the album. Maybe there's a song or two that didn't quite come out the way you wanted, the mix wasn't quite what you wanted or whatever, or maybe the album was too, I had a situation where I was sitting on Chrome where it was like three songs, album was too long. The label was like, too many songs, it's like 18 songs is too many. So I had to like drop three records. But other than that, like every record that we were making was because we wanted people to hear it and we wanted it on the album. It's not just going in and, you know, doing five songs in a day. I never heard of that, like five songs in a day. That's like not what I'm from.
Also, you guys have a lot of skits.
I'm into skits. I'm sorry. I'm into, I want to entertain people beyond the songs. You know what I'm saying? It just annoys me when an album's just kind of, song goes off, fades out, and the next song comes on. There's nothing to connect the songs or make the album more than what it is. And nobody's doing it, so it really opens up the door for me to just be as creative as I want to be with it, and it helps my projects stand out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Kent, you mentioned just the word entertainment a couple of times, like in talking about Drake and talking about Action Bronson. How, and even now, you know, just talking about the skits, and how important is that element of entertainment to your process?
It's hugely important. It's what, you know, when I'm making the songs, I'm making the songs. The songs stand on their own. They have to stand on their own. But once the songs are done, then I immediately go into the head or the mind of the listener, the person who just bought that, downloaded that album or bought that CD. They're getting on the train home from work. They're putting their iPod buds in, the earbuds in, and they're about to be on the train for 45 minutes, an hour, and they're going to play my album from beginning to end. I want them to feel like the experience is like watching a movie or a TV show, and that they don't want to skip a song because, oh, this song's boring, or this is boring. I want them to want to know, well, what's going to happen next. This is pretty cool. And so when I'm putting these records together, that's my thinking or my mindset as I'm doing it.
In doing that, do you come up with like the overall concept of the entire album before you record it, or does it just kind of like unfold as you're going through it?
Well, like the album that I, the most recent album that I put out was with my group EMC called The Tonight Show, and we made all the songs. They were done, no concept in mind. Then we said,
really?
"Well, we collectively said we want the word show to be in the title of the album, because we had, the first album was called The Show." So like, okay, you know, EPMD had all those albums with the word business in it. Let's try to do something similar to that. Every album, let's put the word show in it. And so we had a list of titles with the word show in it. And I looked at all of those titles. And The Tonight Show, to me, lent itself more to a really cool, funny, interesting storyline. By seeing The Tonight Show, I got the vision right away that I wanted this to be about us as the musical guest on The Tonight Show. I wanted to have an actual person be the host of The Tonight Show. We chose comedian Russell Peters to be our character, Jimmy Falcon. Then I said, well, we're gonna need special guests on the album, so what celebrities can we reach out to that'll do a favor? Rosie Perez is a friend of mine from Brooklyn, from way back, you know, known her since the early 90s. She was nice enough to do a favor and come in and record a skit for me. I reached out to Tony Rock, who I had met at the Comedy Store in L.A. a couple of years back. We actually had mutual friends. He grew up with guys I went to high school with, so that was, you know, he did me a favor and jumped on the album. And so I just built this idea of The Tonight Show around the songs. It gets tricky because the album sequence is still important. Even though you're trying to tell this story, you can't have you can't start the album off with a low tempo record. So everything kind of has to make sense, and it's a little bit of a, you know, playing a little bit of a, I don't know, Sudoku or something, some kind of, I don't know, one of those games, to try to mix and match the songs and the skits, and have the right sequence as well as the skits making sense, and it tells a story from the very beginning to the very end of the album. When we get snubbed at the end of the album and don't actually get to perform on The Tonight Show, which I gave away the ending, but hopefully people will still go get it.
It's very complete, you know. It's funny how to hear the process, because in listening to it, I really felt like I was in your guys' green room in the presence of it. But there's certain songs that stand out that I think exist outside of obviously being booked for a television show like Moopies, hilarious.
Yeah. Thank you.
I like the fact that you approach that, because as an artist, you're on the road, you experience that, and I don't know if you deal with it in the same sort of, the song sounds aggressive at times, so, and I
you
know
probably
you
get it. You probably get it worse than us, though. I can only imagine you.
Nah, I'm sure it's the same. It's just, like, I was, like, picturing everything, and so how do you deal with that outside of the record? Is your tone a little more calmer, or do you just kind of, is it as it is on the record?
Well, we tried to make the song feel lighthearted and funny. That was the goal. I hope we accomplished that. You know, don't want fans to feel like we're unapproachable. That wasn't the purpose of the song, but it was just to let fans know that some of y'all be ODing and y'all need to just relax and chill. And, you know, when you be aware that you've had too much to drink. Some of our male fans, since that record came out, you know, they come up to get an autograph. Yo, I'm not a moopy. I'm like, no, listen, you're not a moopy until you ask me for the 10th dap and you've been standing here for 25 minutes talking about the same thing. Like, you good. Like, it's cool to come up. It's cool to take a photo. It's cool to shake hands. It's cool to sign something, buy something at the table, and keep it moving. Let the next person slide up. So yeah, and also, since that song has come out, there's been people who don't pay attention to it at all and continue to moop out at the shows.
Look, fam, I really do hope that you understand. I'm not trying to hang in the room with you and your man. That is not the plan on any kind of a level. I really hope you dig what I'm saying, find you a shovel. I know you all excited, delighted how we ignited, but being so misguided can really find you in trouble. The after party back at the room, but you're not invited. Use a movie, guilty as charged, you got indicted. Ain't nothing wrong with you loving the music. You wanna take a picture, it's cool, happy to do it. But if you try to offer me weed, I'ma refuse it. Ask what I'm saying again and I'ma lose it. I don't wanna confuse it, this is not fan bashing. But don't be a movie, please, this man's asking. What a headache, pass the damn aspirin. Don't be a movie, fam, this man's asking. What's a moopy, stupid, a male groupie? OD and touching and talking after the show. Wanna hang and run around with the gang, asking all these questions. Yes, the answer is no. I'm a fan too, understand what fans do. A difference with a female fan and what a man do. Wasn't there for rehearsing songs we ran through. Now you wanna stand with us like you part of the band too. By mistake, stuff to sign, the fans hand you. A few female phone numbers that might land you. Going to the after party is in my plans too. When it's time to leave, you wanna ride in the van too? You email me from a foreign place. I'm here, you got your stink breath all in my face. Damn. I'm not your girl, fam, keep your hands off. I don't know you and I'm not dropping you and your mans off. I just did a show, I'm not recording at your lab. Put that glass down, boy, you can't drink off this tab. You say this girl's a horse, so that ex I will show you. When I ask about you, she say she don't even know you.
Yo, Masa A, Strickland, Westworth, EMC, what's up, y'all? Yo, yo, you going to the van? I'm going to the van, too. Yo, you going to the hotel? Oh, I'm gonna go to the hotel. Oh, you got something to eat? Oh, I'm gonna get something to eat, too. Yo, yo, take a picture. Let's take another picture.
Dude, why you all in my ear? You're drunk, the music's too loud.
I can't decide if it's, don't spray it. Your breath smell like if beer. Saying I'm not a moopie is actually a total moopie move. Demonstrating knowledge
you mean,
of
you mean like a girl
work.
Saying I'm not a groupie?
Yeah.
It's not, because most overwhelming majority of the fans, male fans, are cool. They say what's up, they keep it brief, you know what I'm saying? They want to give you their demo or their tape or their new album. They want you to sign this, take a picture, and it's over. And it's cool. I'm with all of that. I always, after the show, go out and hang at the merch table and want to meet fans. I'm with that. It's just the guys that don't know when to chill and just go away now. Like, you know, and I have some experiences where it's like, you know, it gets a little crazy.
I think it's hard for people to deal with fame. That's a really obvious thing to say. But I think there's like a conception of the world where some people are on a pedestal and some people aren't, and there are like all sorts of ways that you can accept that that is true, and then you can't like deal with reality if you think that somebody is like fancier right. than you.
Right. It's I get it, you know what I'm saying? There's, you bought this person's music, you love what they do, the songs affected you in some, you know, unique way, and that's great, you know, and it's cool to express that. But I don't need you to kiss my hand, buddy. I don't need you to grab my head and squeeze it, shake. Yeah, like, I don't need that aggression. I'm not with any of that. Like where I'm from, you don't grab people's head and all that extra stuff. Like it's just not cool. Not cool.
Yeah, people are overly excited. I don't think they realize sometimes how excited they really are.
They don't.
Question: Did Bob Power mix this album?
Nah, he didn't mix it, but the studio where we work out, we have one of the suites, and we're on 27th Street, and we have one of the suites. Bob Power has one of the big rooms in the same suite, so he's walking by our room all the time with his dog, and what's up, guys? So one day I was like, I need a voice for this part. I need somebody to play security guard. And he just walked by the room, and my partner, Rich, was like, Bob, come here for a minute. Can you, what do you need me to do? All right, I'm gonna give you guys three or four, and that's it, I gotta go. And he knocked it out real quick.
How you doing? I just wanted to say what's up to Tony real quick.
Yo. Tone, you know this dude?
Oh, yeah, he's good. That's Ace, yo. What's up, Ace?
What's going on, Tone? I just wanted to stop by, say what's up, you know, wish you luck. You on next, right?
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I'm on like 15 minutes. Where's the rest of the crew? Where's everybody at?
Well, Wordsworth is back in the green room. We've been dealing with a little crisis, man.
Crisis? Uh-oh, what happened?
Well, Strickland, he ain't not here yet. I mean, we supposed to be going on right after you, and something going on with his driver. I don't know.
Yeah. Some of these drivers, they got that look like they just came home, man.
Yeah. But I see you out there doing your thing, man. You staying busy with it.
Hey, man. This is the paper chase. You know me, man. No time for bullshit. We from Brooklyn. We hustle hard, you know?
No doubt.
Like Puff said, can't stop, won't stop.
You're right.
From Monday motivation, Sunday no vacation. You know, that's me.
All right. But, I mean, what about, you know?
Ace, can't stop. Say it with me.
Won't stop?
Everybody's Bob Powers imitation is the same.
Yeah.
It's funny.
That's
all I got.
That was special. That was special for me hearing him. I was like, wait, Bob sounded super tough. And for the listeners who don't know who Bob Power is, Bob Power mixed all the Tribe Called Quest records and a whole bunch of other like great records. So just, you know, he's really nice person. And but hearing him that, I was like, what's going on right now? It's pretty cool.
When's the last time you saw him?
I saw Bob. Man, I can't believe I just before I left New York for LA
to make
my move. And no, that was like nine months ago.
Yeah. Oh, not that long. You saw him?
Yeah, not that long. I mean, I've talked to him in the past 2 months, but last time saw him was just before I left.
I was trying to orchestrate a reunion, but you've seen him. So
we do need to get him on microphone, Jack. That is true.
He's got a million stories.
Yeah, I know he does.
He does. So just going back a little bit, obviously, you know, you say you look forward to meeting fans. You've been doing this for a long time, a lot longer than I have. What gets you excited about still making music after all this time?
I feel like I'm still trying to prove myself. I know that might sound crazy, but I still feel like I have something to prove. You know, when I came up in the late 80s with the Juice Crew and being on that label with cats like Big Daddy Kane and Coogee Rap, super lyrical, and you know, big. Well, MC Shan was a big star at that time. Biz Markie, big star. You know, it was tough to make your way with all of this. It was clutter. It was just a lot of good people around you, and you're trying to shine in that, and it was so difficult to do that. And so I think my entire journey has been me kind of just proving that I belonged in that room with those guys. So I'm still...
in the saloon with those guys.
I feel like I'm still doing that, still trying to prove that I belong there.
Well, yeah, okay. So you took a break, though.
I did. You mean right after Sitting on Chrome? That break? Which break?
I was thinking of the 04 after Disposable Arts break.
Oh, well, I was touring. I mean, when Disposable came out, Disposable Arts is my number one album that I've made, because it single-handedly rejuvenated my career and extended my career going on for, you know, 14 years. It came out in 01 and in October of 01, and you know, we're pushing 14 years now since that record came out. There's no way, after Sitting on Chrome and where I was mentally, there's no way that I should still be making records, because I was really, really done, for real. Like, after Sitting on Chrome and all of the backlash from New York, all of the, oh, you went West Coast, and just you know, being accused of, you know, all kinds of things, I was done. I actually made up a resume. I started putting together beat tapes and shopping beats to labels. I was having meetings. I was passing resumes out to see if I could get a job at a label. So to go from that point to dropping Disposable and finding this whole new generation of fans that's followed me since 01, many of whom didn't know anything about the first three albums, bought Disposable Arts and became fans from that day. That album, you know, hands down, is the most important album of my career. I toured for 3 years after Disposable Arts dropped, and then dropped A Long Hot Summer in 04. But I was super active in between those albums. And then after 04, the next record came out was EMC, The Show, which was 2000, when we started working on it in 06. But it didn't come out until 2008. And then right after that, I was right back in the studio with Ed OG, dropped the album with Ed. I mean, I've been consistently doing music since that time.
So you're right. I guess I was asking if, and we can edit this if you want. I mean, I know that you've talked about your multiple sclerosis diagnosis.
Yeah.
I don't know what there is to say, though, about it, other than like, if it has affected the reasons that you work.
It definitely had an effect. I was diagnosed in 2000, so it kind of put things into perspective career-wise, life-wise. Didn't know what, you know, my long-term health was going to be like, and decided that if I was going to leave the game, I wanted to leave on my own terms. I didn't want to leave with, you know, my hometown saying I was a West Coast sellout and that I did it. You know, I was actually, you know, making excuses for why Born to Roll blew up and did what it did, why Sitting on Chrome was getting played in L.A. and INC Ride. And it took me a minute to realize that, you know, I didn't need to make an excuse for success of a record. Like, wherever they were going to like the record, that's what it was. You know, New York caught up way late, you know. I think, you know, Flex started playing it like almost a year after it had already blown up in all of these other markets. He started playing some of the songs. But I just decided, you know, with that diagnosis, that I wanted to go out on my own terms. I rededicated myself to the craft in a different way, and I made my best music, I feel, after that diagnosis. I started coaching football, high school football, after that. I wanted to, that was something I had been thinking about for a really long time, but didn't think I would ever do it. That diagnosis made me want to go out and do that, give back to young people. Did that for 9 years. actually 11 years, 9 years in Brooklyn, 2 years in Jersey. But yeah, that, and the diagnosis has changed my life in terms of my commitment to fitness and health. I go to the gym 3 to 4 times a week. I run now, which I never thought I would ever run again.
I feel very shamed by your Twitter when you're like waking up early.
Oh, yo. I mean, that's, you know, when you get that kind of news, you either go in the tank or you change the way you think and do something different. I started eating very, very different. And, you know, I'm definitely one of the only people in my circle that eat the way I eat. But, you know, they respect the fact that I'm doing it for a reason. I try not to preach. I can be annoying at times when I see guys, you know, getting McDonald's and French fries and all of that. I try not to say anything and let dudes live their lives because I know it could be annoying. But I just, food. I feel like food is the reason that I have what I have, what I've eaten in my life. And so I'm just trying to change what I put in my body. I've been doing it for the last 10 years, little by little.
Wow. Yeah, I started drinking a lot more water, and I think it's made all the difference.
Got to drink water.
Totally chilled everything out.
There was a point where I couldn't drink water with a meal.
Yeah, I know.
Like, it was like, ew.
Totally.
I can't drink water. Give me something sweet. Like, but that's all about just changing your taste buds.
Right.
You do that, you fast for a while, and you'll completely change your taste buds and your desire for stuff. I know Ali could talk about eating well all day long.
I know. People always are like, Brandy, why does Ali still look so good? Like, why does Sadiq look so good? And I was like, why the fuck do you think they look so good? They take care of themselves.
So it's about...
Yeah, that's true, but I have to admit, I have a really bad liking for chocolate. So,
but chocolate's good for you.
It is good for you, chocolate. You know, right. It could be excessive in my case at different points in time, depending on like how disciplined I am. But yeah, but you know, last time I saw you, Ace, you looked crazy young too. So, whatever you're doing, it's working.
Thank you, man. Thank you. It's definitely my diet. You know, I can't help but look at some of my peers, that we're close to the same age, and know that they lived very, very hard. Like, we all in the 90s and, you know, was wilding out. Everybody was, you know, staying up till 4, 5, 6 in the morning, mad girls, going to get some diner food, getting a steak and whatever, mm-hmm. and wild, crazy, you know, whatever was open, you was eating that. White Castle, whatever. And getting 3 hours of sleep and then just being right back on the grind of just being in the streets and that stuff, and not to mention the alcohol. I mean, I never was into drugs and all of that, but weed, I wasn't into none of that. But, you know, the drinking, that stuff takes a toll on you when you're doing it for 20 years. If you do it for 20 years, like, you can't be in your 40s and behaving the way you behaved when you were in your 20s. It's just not going to work. And it's going to show on your face, in your body, in your gut. You know, the battle with the gut at 40 is real. It's real.
It is.
I look in the mirror every day, like, okay, I got that alone, just looking in the mirror, I go, okay, going to the gym today. Can't lose this battle. I refuse.
That's how you could get more female fans, you know? It's like, makes...
By having a gut?
No, sir. Oh. I wish that, you know, we do have our priorities.
Yeah.
But if you were to make a song about the battle, because that is some girl shit right there.
The battle of the gut?
Mm. Just the battle of a lot of things.
Okay.
Over All right. here. All
right. Yeah. I'm going to think about that. I got to give you writer's credit on that now?
Mm-hmm.
Ghostwriter?
Just right. percentage. That's fine.
All right.
I have a question. I would like to hear some stories. And I have heard several stories about the symphony, mostly involving something with Kane. and a little gun.
Oh no! Okay.
But what was your What was your story with that song? Were you on that school bus that went upstate?
Oh, I was on that bus.
Okay.
I was on that bus.
What were you doing on the bus?
We were on our way up to a dude ranch in the Adirondacks.
I love this story so much.
We were on our way up to the Adirondacks to a dude ranch to shoot. It was a 2-day shoot with, I believe Lionel Martin was the director.
Yeah.
And there were 2 buses chartered to take everybody up, all the artists, all the extras, all the crew, all the equipment. And we were going to stay the night upstate and shoot this video, Western theme, the whole bit. And on the bus, on the way up, we were doing a lot of snapping, as we call it, you know, cracking jokes, talking about each other, you know, just funny stuff. Everybody, it was hilarious, some of the jokes. Like, G-Rap was one of the funniest dudes. Like, people, you know, hear his rhymes, they don't know about his funny side, but he has some good jokes. And so everybody's cracking jokes or whatever. And then somehow the jokes escalated to throwing stuff, like little balled up pieces of paper and then bigger pieces of paper. And then other random things started getting thrown and it got out of hand, like for real. Like, and so Kane just stood up and was like, I'm not playing no more. Don't nobody throw nothing else at me. And everybody like was quiet for a second. And then one dude, after he sat down, threw one little thing at him. And, you know, he jumped up, you think I'm playing? And, you know, a fight broke out. There was a weapon that was discharged by someone. And it ricocheted off of a window on the bus and lodged in the arm of one of the extras sitting in the back of the bus. We took the parties that were having the altercation and put them on separate buses. And the guy who got the bullet in the arm had to be taken to the hospital upstate New York. And I don't know exactly what he told. But obviously, when you come to a hospital with a bullet, police get involved. I don't know what was said to the police, but the police came. Actually, they came that next day, right when we were about to film the walk into the saloon part. Like, we were right about to film that part, and they came and...
Meaning you are in costume.
We were in costume, about to walk into the... about to film the opening of the door one by one. And like I said, I don't know what the guy told the police, but they said that they needed to talk to Kane specifically. And so that's why he's not in the Western scene at all in the video. I've never told this story, like, publicly. I've told the story a million times on the tour van, you know, to the fellas, but I've never told the story. But he was the one who they decided to... arrest. I don't know if they arrested him or they just brought him in for questioning just to find out, you know, what happened, whatever. I don't know how it was settled. We shot the rest of the video and then we had to come back a different day and shoot separate scenes for Kane just to make up for what the parts that he wasn't in.
I don't care who's first or who last, but I know that y'all just better rock this at the drop of a dime, baby. I don't know what y'all gonna do with this, but it got to be funky. It got to be funky if you're gonna be on it. I don't care who start, I don't care what y'all do, but you got to be finished before the music is through.
Listen closely, so your attention's undivided. Many in the past have tried to do what I did. Just the way I came off then, I'm gonna come off. Stronger and longer, even with the drum off. I'll keep on going and flowing just like a river. I got a whole lot to give, so I'm a giver. Little at a time. Trails are blazing, action is in effect, it always stays in, yeah, just like a shot from a cannon, I am the man in charge and I'm the planet, a jam strong enough that it can lift your soul, I'm the originator, and my rhymes are made of gold, once you hear the capital A, rap it'll stay with you for a while, it won't go away, unless you force it, because it stays with you my friend, and if you force it away, I'ma hit you again, I project my voice so it's right in the crowd, there's a sign at the door, no bright and loud.
was the calm. Now here's the storm. Next up, yo, I believe that's me. Craig G, light up the mic for the symphony. This gym is dedicated to all unoptimistics that thought I wasn't coming out with some exquisite rhymes. But that's alright, cause now I'm back to kill all the rumors and straighten the facts of me. Not rocking rhymes like I always used to, but you jumped on the tip when you heard me in the Juice Crew. You said, ain't that something? The Craig, I heard you in that jam and it's pumping. I apologize. Oh yeah, and can I have your autograph for me and my grandma? That's how I'm living, on surprise mode. Don't even sleep, try not to keep your eyes closed. Cause if you do, when you awaken, this so-called spot will be taken. I'll take it over like a greedy executive. Cause on the mic, my perspective is to be the best in all rap events. And since I have the call, I call experience. Next up, yo, I believe that's me. Cool G-Rap, light up the mic for the symphony. Yo, Marley gives a slice. I get nice and my voice is twice as horrifying as this advice. Goes deep till you fell in a spell of a sleep. And while I'm counting the money, you count sheep. When G-Rap strikes the mic, I recite the type, the hype that you like to make the people unite. I grip off the hips and zip off lips. Step on reps. You flip, I want to sip on my tip. Take a deep breath because you don't have enough left. Coming back like I'm avenging my brother's death. Making veterans run for medicine, cause I put out more light in a fight the con Edison. Rip the damn cage like I'm on a rampage. So if you want rage, I'ma make front page. Read the headlines, suckers, the day's the deadline. Your head is way past bedtime. Can't kill no solo, cause you're still low. Soft like a pillow, my rap is rougher than Brillo. So fear me, don't dare dare me. And don't compare me to him when you hear me. Talk about a battle, but you ain't yet ready for war. Your metaphor sucks more than a whore. You can't replace me, ice me or ace me. Face me, face me, slice me or race me. Bite me or taste me, I'll show you that I got force. My rap burns your mouth like hot sauce. Run for water while I break your tape recorder. Serve the sucker, the order is manslaughter. Another rapper, G-Rap Rex, he's rated X. The meaner boy is sex. Next, the amplifier gets used and abused. Pump so loud, we might blow fuse. This is anger, madness, ready to hang up. Rapper a singer, I'm putting up my middle finger. Next up, I believe that's me. Big Daddy can't get on a mic for the symphony. Setting it off, letting it off, beginning. Fuck till the ending, you never been in. The move, the groove with the smooth rap.
And that's the, that's the politically correct version of that story.
It's okay. Marley and Uncle Ralph have told us those stories on mic, so.
Okay.
It's okay. We'll be careful.
So you know who did what, and yeah. It didn't come from me.
What are some of your other tour bus go-tos?
Oh, tour bus go-tos. We did a tour in 91. It was supposed to be the sort of the new Coachellan, because at that point Coachellan they went like signed crazy.
Right.
They signed Kid Capri. They signed the Genius, now known as GZA. They signed Diamond Shell. They signed Granddaddy IU. They signed another group. I can't think. They signed like about five or six acts, and they wanted to roll a tour out with these acts. We it was two tour buses. Now this is my first time being on a real tour bus with the sleeper joints. And the first show was in Newark, New Jersey, or maybe it wasn't Newark. Might have been Asbury Park. That's where it was at. And it's kind of hood out there. And the very first show, GZA, he was bringing ODB with him as his hype man. So they were like they were gonna go first. They were the least known out of everybody, so they went first. And he had ODB come out first to kind of get the crowd, you know, hype, allegedly. And ODB didn't like the way the crowd was responding to him, so he started cursing the crowd out. F y'all Jersey cats, like, he went crazy. And a riot almost broke out before the first act even went on. Like, it got. He had to get rushed off the stage. They was throwing stuff at him. They had to get him off the stage real fast. And right after that happened, Fly Ty, who was the president of Coachellan, told GZA, your man's not going on the road with us. Send him home. He's not going on the road with us. And so I miss out on being on the road with ODB for like, we was out there for like about a month. all around the U.S. Because of that one incident. But he was probably a little intoxicated, and he's from Brooklyn. He don't like Jersey cats for whatever reason, and he decided that he was gonna let them know that night on stage that he don't like Jersey cats, and it got ugly real quick, and he got kicked off the tour after the first show. And you know, rest in peace, ODB. It was still a good tour. Well, I shouldn't say good tour. It was a cool tour, first experience. We found out at the end of the tour, because this was a quote unquote promo tour, so nobody's getting paid, right?
Oh wow!
But we were getting per diem, and the hotel was taken care of, and the expenses were taken care of. We found out right before the last show, one of the promoters, I think, talked. Kane wasn't on that tour. The tour was Bismarcky, who was actually not performing, but he was the host. The tour was Granddaddy IU, Coogee Rap, and Polo, myself, GZA, Kid Capri, and that was it. I don't think Diamond Show went. And we found out at the very last show that these guys was getting like $40,000 a show.
Wow.
For that tour.
Wow.
And like, it almost got crazy, cause all of us like banded together, like we was ready to flip on Fly Ty. He tried to say that, well, that's paying for the buses and that's paying for the hotels, and you know, we never got accounted to, but that's the kind of stuff that went on at that label. And that's why that label, which, you know, there was a point where Cold Chillin' and Def Jam was neck and neck in terms of prestige, in terms of, you know, artists, in terms of record sales. They were right there with Def Jam, but Def Jam did a better job of treating their artists the right way. Cold Chillin' decided to be, you know, backdoor, grimy, you know, dirty, and they didn't treat the artists the right way. So one by one, everybody jumped ship. You know, Craig G jumped ship first, because they signed him when he was 15, and they didn't have a legal guardian sign it, so he got out of his deal real easy. Kane left next. He didn't leave Cold Chillin', but he left their management because they were managing everybody. He left and went to Rush Management. That was a huge, big deal because they felt like they lost to Russell. And then eventually he went on MCA. And then I was the next artist to leave, went to Cold Chillin'.
You went to Cold?
I mean, I went to, sorry, Delicious Vinyl. I went to Delicious Vinyl. And
wait, sorry. So just to clarify, and I apologize if this is bringing back. So Delicious is the LA label.
LA, yeah.
So was that a part of the backlash?
Because the perception, you know, I was on a label with Tone Loc and Young MC.
Yeah.
Big pop artists from the West Coast, sold millions of records, hit or singles. And I was now signed to that label, but the label was trying to reinvent itself and have more credibility. They didn't want to be known as just like this pop, you know, yeah, label. So they signed me and they signed Farside.
Right.
And signed Def Jeff. So they was trying to bring some more grassroots hip hop to their brand. So that's why they signed us. And you know, the perception of the music that I was making was, oh, he's on some West Coast stuff. But I put out Slaughterhouse, which didn't have a West Coast feel at all to it. And New York wasn't paying attention. Okay, y'all don't want to see what I'm doing over here. I'm doing something grimy and dirty and different. So I'm going to make some other type of music that somebody else might rock with. I remixed Jeep Ass Nigga and turned it into a song called Born to Roll. Immediately it blows up in the Bay Area. It spread throughout California, and then it spread its way east, went to the south, and went to Texas. It went to the Midwest. And before you knew it, the record was all over the radio everywhere but New York. And I was, you know, I turned into a household name for those markets that didn't know me before. They had no clue about the symphony. They didn't know anything about my first album or my connection with Cold Chillin'. All they knew was Born to Roll, I like that song. They played on the radio all the time. I like that guy, whoever made that song. And it was a new career for me.
I heard that song in the context of, first of all, I lived on the West Coast at that time.
Okay.
But I heard that as a Brooklyn song.
Did you think I was Mexican? Because a lot of people, for some reason, thought I was Mexican when they heard that song.
I don't think I did.
Okay.
I know that I do get that phrase, I got música grande, I got it going on, stuck in my head like every third day.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I then translated that.
Some people did.
No.
And I had a video out, and people still thought I was...
Well, and the video was also like...
I was showing low riders.
Yeah.
I was showing low riders. I had Lokes on, little dark glasses and all of that. You know, I get it. But it was all it was a remix to a song, previously released song that had a video for it. All I did was change the beat. I didn't change the rhymes. I didn't change the phrasing. Everything was pretty much exactly the same.
And the force is centrifugal. Can you find your way through the lyrics that be catching them? Throw another rhyme across the room, they be fetching them. If they take a loss to the master. And I throw those crazy blows and they knows I be blastering. All across the room, on the ceilings and the walls too. Punk little suckers didn't know I had the gall to come around they block with my cock diesel system and turn it up to 10 and then start to diss them. And they didn't want to battle if they did when they saw me. They'd have opened up their trunk, but they tried to ignore me. Hey little suckers, I know you hear me calling you, but you wanted some, but I see that you're all into frontin'. Ain't no future in your frontin', so let's get it on like Marvin Gaye. Take the cash and sit it on the hood of your wick whack, low riding Cadillac. Back up your boys and let's start the battle act. Like, you know, the master's the ace, don't play when it comes to my bass.
Ah, check it out, baby, check it out, dog. Check it out, baby, check it out, dog. Check it out, baby, check it out, dog. Check it out, baby.
I was born wrong.
Driving down the block like, listen, what else, man, should a brother do? It's Saturday, it's Saturday. As a rap fan myself, I can say that we get it wrong.
It's cool. That's cool. It's my cross to bear.
Yeah. I can't. You know, another thing that you do, and this may also help you with the ladies, I guess, is you've often
Do I need help with the ladies? Oh,
I
fans.
Don't know. I feel like you said, I did. I mean, I don't know. You
no,
tell me.
No, but. I need fans. I need fans. Come on. Give me more advice. I'm open.
Well, I think you've, maybe to remind our microphone check female fans, that you have often had female guests on your songs.
Oh, yeah. Mm. That's... Disposable Arts was unique in the fact that I had three different female rappers on the album. Jean Grey, Jane Doe, and Rod Digger.
First time I ever heard Jean Grey.
Really?
Uh-huh.
That's cool. I don't know if anybody ever did that before, but it felt right. It was, you know, they fit what I needed to happen, and why not? It was cool. It was great collabos.
Do you think there's anything about, like, just about that aspect, but other things that were going on that made that album work in 01 that made it wouldn't have worked in, like, I don't know, 97?
Yeah. I mean, it caught a lot of people off guard because that was already kind of, it was the tail end of the Bad Boy, you know, radio, they were like ruling the radio for about 5 or 6 years straight with, you know, this R&B/hip-hop sound. And it hadn't quite died out yet. And I don't think anybody expected me to come with anything that was legit. I was pretty mad at the Source? It was XXL. It was XXL. No, it was Vibe. Vibe did a review. I don't remember the dude. Did a review, and when you read the review, I knew immediately he didn't listen to the album.
What?
Because he said, I don't need to hear 16 songs from Master Ace. And it wasn't 16 songs on the album. It was there was a bunch of skits, but the skits were numbered. And so he gave it like some low rating, but it pissed me off. because he didn't read the album. I mean, he didn't listen to the album. And, you know, that was just
That's
one.
That's a fireable offense.
It is, to me. To me. He may have skimmed it, but he didn't listen to the songs in their entirety.
How do you deal with that sort of occurrence, you know, in terms of, like, do you contact the journalist directly, or do you take it into your next record?
Nah, I use it as fuel. I use it as fuel when I go back in the studio. You know, I've been slighted quite a bit throughout my career in those kinds of ways, those little slights, those little oversights. And those are the things that keep me, you said, what motivates me to keep making music is those kinds of little things that, you know, keep me going, keep that fuel burning inside of me to continue to prove myself and make people see the light.
That's funny. Cormega said the same thing in, like, similar language. And you guys have Jerry in common.
Yeah. And we're on a song together.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We have felt that way at Microphone Check, honestly.
And what do you do about it?
We just win.
That's it. Just keep going.
Mm-hmm. I think we should probably, I feel like, I mean, I feel I could talk for longer.
I'm here. I'm relaxed.
Okay.
We can, whatever bases you want to touch, let's do it. I've never been up here, so let's try to get it all out.
Cool.
You know what I want to talk about? I just want to talk about, like, the state of, you know, America and where it is now. And, you know, we are relatively the same age, so growing up and both from Brooklyn, and I know how the you have a song that you dedicated to your mom, and I don't know, you know, what your mother's background was in terms of you know, civil rights and all that, and I know that I'm guessing that had to have an effect on you in the way that, you know, she raised you. But then, you know, growing up through the 70s and seeing the changes in Brooklyn, specifically how Broadway was destroyed over a blackout, and the entire commerce of this, you know, one, I don't, it's more than a neighborhood. Broadway stretches through a lot of Brooklyn. And it took almost nearly 20 years for it to be, you know, kind of like brought back to life. And then came the drug era and the crack era, which again ruined the community. And then there's obviously a change in New York, but I don't want to talk about that. Just the, you know, this police brutality, you know, you've talked about it before in several in other records. And as it relates to the way artists are disconnected from what's happening in, you know, in the streets and with the people, what are your thoughts when you go into a studio at this age right now?
I'm actually in the studio working on my new solo record, which is dealing specifically with the 4 years that I was in high school, which was 80 to 84, and talking about that time period, touching on some of the stuff you just talked about, how the drug era was ushered in and how the community was kind of dismantled by, you know, the influx of drugs, and specifically the black woman, and how it was us, the black male, you know, basically handing those drugs over to our ladies and basically destroying the family structure. I had very close friends whose mothers went from working, healthy women to, you know, basically walking zombies, like, in a matter of a year or two. And, you know, I went away to college right after I graduated in 84. I went right to college. And so I would come home and see people looking like a totally different person that lived in my building, that was the mom of my boy who I hung out with. And so I touch on that on this new record a little bit. I don't know what the disconnect is with artists. I think that artists now, the younger cats, they really just want to quote unquote turn up and get a record on the radio so they can make them some money, so they can buy them a little car and some little jewelry and have their little neighborhood fame for a hot second, which is, you know, what we all maybe wanted when we first started making music. But, you know, the stakes are way higher now. And I think I have to put a little bit of the blame on commercial radio, because there's enough other music out there that they could play a better balance of hip hop if they wanted to. It almost makes me feel like they're playing the ratchet crap, the, you know, the trap, the ratchet, the shoot 'em up, the drug sling songs, because, you know, I try not to be a conspiracy theorist, but it's like I don't know what else to be when I'm looking at what's being played on the radio. The other day I posted a few things on my Instagram. I took my daughter to a concert, this group called R5, you know, real safe white group, you know, teenage kids or whatever, and they're just singing kind of happy, you know, love songs, music or whatever. And it's crazy to me because me and my wife were talking about it on the way home, and I'm like, is there an artist that I could take a black artist making black music that I will be comfortable taking my daughter to go see? Because she knows, you know, what's popular. So what's popular is you turn on the radio and listen to what's being played. And then right. You don't want to take your kid to these artist shows. You wouldn't take them to see any of these artists that's being played on black radio right now. And, you know, I'm glad that there's something out there, and that's what I put in my post. I'm glad that there's some kind of music out there that's age appropriate for her that she can listen to, but it just so happens to be, you know, these white kids that are singing happy songs. But where's the black artist singing happy songs? There are none. Everybody's slinging drugs and singing about being trap queens and all that. And that's no direct, you know, jab at Fetty Wap specifically, but I'm just saying, you know, I saw a video of our friends sent a video of her son. He's about 11, I want to say. And he was singing that song. He was singing Trap Queen at 11 years old. He filmed himself singing it. And I'm looking at an 11-year-old talking about she's cooking in the kitchen, she's my trap queen. And I had a lot of problems with that. Because, like, that's, like, not age. He don't really know what he's singing about. It's just the point of, like, he's 11 and this is all he has. There's got to be a right. way for commercial radio to put other music out there besides what they putting out there. You know, I'm in love with the cold core. That's a cool song. I like it. I get it. The beat, all that. But what's the balance? Tell me what the balance is.
Yeah.
I feel like people really are not speaking up, and, you know, to go on about Ghostface, but the rant, well, I shouldn't call it a rant, but, you know, his communication was very reminiscent of the old days of hip hop when you would address the bullshit, you know, and I feel like no one's addressing it.
Yeah.
And in a very assertive manner.
Nobody wants to be viewed as a bitter old cat. So yeah. It's like, well, if I say something, I'm hating on the younger cats, and that's not really what it is. I'm asking commercial radio to do a better job of serving up a balance. Because right. there's plenty of good music out there that ain't talking about slinging drugs. Plenty of good music out there that ain't talking about threesomes with girls in the club. Like, it's all good. There's many kinds of movies. You got Scarface, and then you got love comedies. You know, there's a million categories. So we need to be able to hear it all, not just one thing, and that's all they pumping.
Yeah, Ali has talked about this before in relation to, like, hard sales numbers.
Yeah.
Really, it was about Barter 6, which is like, look at the numbers and then come back and tell me that this justifies the number of spins it's getting. I think there's a very quiet movement that is like confuses, in particular, the New York media, but that explains the actual real, backed up by hard numbers, popularity of somebody like J. Cole. And I do think it is because people are looking for things that are as sometimes like kind of awkward and like corny as they might be. Still, to the people who are choosing them, it feels age appropriate to them, or it feels relatable to them. I think there are a lot of things happening that are either happening maybe like in WhatsApp and not on Twitter, or like in ticket sales and not in like iTunes single sales, that give me hope that like just the existing power structure is like, it's a house of cards.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything to do directly about it. I don't know. I mean, maybe we just need patience.
I don't know. Well, maybe, but I think in having patience, then it's almost like just waiting for it to correct itself. And I think in times, life requires that sort of a response. But I think, well, Aisha, your story is interesting because I don't have children, but I could not imagine having a child and not the child not having a relationship with music that opens up their mind and their imagination and teaches them things. Rafael Sadiq said to me quite often that Chuck D was his history teacher. And so he got a lot from the music, things that he wasn't getting maybe in school. And so I feel the same way with regards to Earth, Wind & Fire and Stevie Wonder. And to be in this time period where the truth of life is not being communicated and conveyed through the artists is troubling to me. And it's to me a sign that humanity is entering into an age that may be very dark unless you become more proactive in at least speaking up about it or doing something. I don't know what that something is, but in terms of radio, knowing that how it's managed and the purpose of radio as a commodity, no different than us putting records out. Like, our records are commodities, and we are looking to make a sale. The radio stations are looking to get the advertising dollars, the end. But at the same time, there's such a power that the radio stations have in distribution of information, and specifically the truth. And when that's not happening, it's no different than having a politician sit up in the office and propagating something that's untrue. You know, at some point, the people have to take a stand. And maybe with regards to music, it may not be that serious to some people, but for me, again, I learned a lot from Earth, Wind & Fire. I learned a lot from Stevie Wonder. And to know that the generation now, they don't have those sort of teachers. I don't know what it's, where we draw the line of just being complacent and saying, okay, it's this is where we are now and it's cool. It's not cool with me, but I don't know.
It's going to take, in this popular culture that we live in, it's going to take an artist that's in a position of power that has the attention of the masses to help bring about change. It's not going to be one of us. We don't have records on the radio right now, so our voices kind of go unheard. It brings me back to Jay Electronica and, you know, him dropping a record. He's an artist that potentially in a short period of time can be somebody who has the attention of people, that people are, he potentially can be that next guy, and he actually is speaking about some things that are a little bit deeper than turning up and partying and threesomes and, you know, drinking and cocaine and slinging. His message has more to offer than what we've been hearing. And it almost makes me wonder, again, not trying to be a conspiracy theorist, you know, what's taking his album so long to come out? Is that the reason? He's somebody, I think, it's going to have to be somebody that's of the now generation that comes out, that sells a whole bunch of records, and then says the right things.
Right.
Other artists that are already on, they're too afraid to step out because they got their position. They don't want to ruin it. They don't want to get any sort of backlash. You know, Kanye, Jay, they're not going to say something about the radio right now because their records are getting spun. But we need somebody of that level to speak up about it and make a stand.
Without disagreeing with you, I'm pretty sure Jay Electronica is like 34, 35.
Okay.
Is there anybody who's like maybe 24, 25 that has potential?
I just don't know who they are. If they might be.
Yeah.
I can't rattle off every, you know, up and comer, but is there somebody in their 20s that is conscious enough of our state, that is brave enough to speak on it, that's gonna have a sales base that people will pay attention to? You mentioned, you know, J. Cole. The only thing about J. Cole is that I on the way here, I was actually listening to one of his records. It was on satellite radio, and he the record had something to do with having sex with a girl.
Wet Dreams.
No, it wasn't that. It was actually off of the Tribe Electric Relaxation Loop.
I remember that one.
Yeah, and you know, he's somebody who potentially could be that guy, but he's almost being ignored a little bit. And at the same time, he's feeling the pressure to speak on topics like sex. And, you know, he has little elements in there. It's almost like, I got to say this. I got to throw some of this in there if I'm going to get these spins. And
keep it edgy,
you know, talk about getting brain and, you know, I got to do some of that.
I think he's like the PG, like on an intellectual and now analytical level, he's the PG version of himself right now. Like, he is not going as hard as he can.
Yeah, well, there's pressure to not go there.
Yeah.
Because he wants to sell records and he wants to be popular and he wants America to embrace him.
Maybe he's got to build the base first.
That's definitely it, you know. That's definitely it.
The 10-year plan. That's what I'm talking about, patience, though. Like, what gives me hope is that I see all these little things that could be people setting things up.
I remember, just brings to mind what you were just saying, brings to mind Bernie Mac when he was on, I want to say it was on Kings of Comedy, when he was speaking about how the other guys on the show all had TV shows, and they won't give him a TV show because they think I'm going to say something, you know. America, I ain't gonna say nothing. I promise. I'm gonna be good. I ain't gonna do nothing. Just give me a chance, America. He was basically saying, I'll tone it down if you guys let me in the door. Because he thought that America was afraid of him because he was dark and he had very strong opinions, and that he had a nasty mouth and that America wasn't going to let him in. And, you know, it kind of feels almost like parallel to perhaps the position that J. Cole might be in.
I feel like in general that's a thing that, yeah, it keeps happening. You know, one way to say it is that people get co-opted. The other is that people get comfortable. You just get in the door. You don't want to leave that place. But I think the same could be said for these white executives at 105, Hot Nice, any of the MS companies, like any of that. It's like, you were young once and you loved this music.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing today?
Kendrick Lamar comes to mind. Another good artist to bring up, because maybe he's the guy. Maybe it's not J. Cole. Maybe it's him. He seems a little bit less, he seems more fearless to speak his mind. He says some stuff on his new record, and he has a lot of white fans, and he says some stuff on his new record that are very edgy and could potentially turn off his white fans, but they're rocking with him. And, you know, maybe he's the guy. His delivery might not be super clear and concise. So his message, it's almost like you got to listen between the lines to get what he's saying a lot of times, but he's definitely saying some stuff. And he's another guy that I think could potentially be that guy. There's going to have to be somebody, and he's selling a lot of records. I'm hoping that if he gets his foot in that door all the way, that he doesn't tone his message down, but even turns it up even another notch.
Hmm. Yeah, well, his song with your girl Taylor doesn't really bode well.
You had to bring that up, huh?
Yeah, my job.
I was trying to not think about that.
I know. I think we should all put bets down. I think it's going to be somebody even younger. I think that kids like in their like late teens, early 20s right now, like though they do not have the history, though they need to do a much better job.
Who's smart enough,
educating
though?
Themselves. Like, I'm not naming names. I'm not saying I even have heard of this person, but like conceive of the world in a different way.
They're going to have to be a brilliant genius, like a prodigy, like at 19, like, and just be so worldly. Like, who's their father? Somebody's going to have guided
Seven.
Them.
Seven going to do it.
Okay. All right.
That's my money.
Okay. I'm with you. Somebody, speak up. They're not listening to us.
Yeah, but we can prepare the audience to be ready for them when they come.
Absolutely. There is a change gonna come.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sir.
Yo, thanks for having me. It's cool. It's like very intellectual, very I feel smart. Thank you.
It's the NPR air. We pipe in the pretension. It's cool.
I mean, to just, you know, kind of like big you up on another aspect, which we didn't talk about, but there aren't many, maybe I'm wrong and I'm uneducated on this, I'm ignorant on it, but I don't know how many MCs have, like, you know, finished school, college, I mean.
Yeah, I thought about that.
It's got to be a couple. I can't rattle off any, but I feel like for sure I'm not alone.
What was your major?
Marketing. I started off as a chemistry major freshman year, and then I took that first calculus class, and I was like, nah, I'm good. Let me switch this up.
I failed math in college also. I got a 13%.
Damn.
And I was like, I gotta go.
13.
University of Rhode Island, right?
Yeah.
What was Providence like back then?
Providence was cool. That was actually like the cool place to go to party. We would go to Brown University and party with the Brown girls. They actually had more Brown girls than Rhode Island than URI did. So we went up to Brown to party with the Brown girls. They actually had like a couple of black fraternities up there. So it was just a better, you know, representation of color at Brown. And so we went up there to party. Who would think an Ivy League school would have more black kids than URI, but believe it or not, they were definitely doing their thing up there. Providence was cool. It was definitely some good parties up there, some good times. I went through my whole college 4 years of college without having an alcoholic beverage.
Whoa.
Yeah, I didn't drink until after I graduated from college. I had never tasted alcohol until I graduated from college.
What happened when you did?
It was cool. I started off with wine coolers.
Okay.
Bottles and James.
Ease into it.
Yeah, I had to ease into it. Started off with bottles and James.
Just stain your mouth. You're like, no, Mom, I wasn't drinking.
I tried some champagne. Actually, the first, I had champagne at a Coachella Christmas party. And I got a little tipsy from that. And then bottles and James. Then I went from wine coolers right into screwdrivers. Like,
well,
but
sugar.
Yeah, it was a big jump. But I'm good now, man. I really rarely even touch the stuff now. Super rarely.
Do you think that continuing education should be mandatory at this stage?
Mandatory for artists or just?
No. Yeah. Well.
Period.
Period.
No, I don't think it should be mandatory because I've gone to school with people that just, it wasn't their thing, but they did have a gift in some other way. Some guys, you know, couldn't wait to get out of high school, but then they went to like a trade school and they became electricians, they became plumbers, mechanics, and that's where their gift was. So I don't think you definitely shouldn't force college on somebody. Certainly, as long as they have the proper, I want to say guidance, because, you know, at school we have something called guidance counselors. As long as the people that are speaking to these young people are telling them the right things, then okay. You know, when I was coaching in Brooklyn, I was actually the academic advisor to the football players. Not only did I coach them, but I was the academic advisor. So they were actually coming to me instead of their guidance counselors to get, you know, the real on what they should be doing with their lives going forward. And I absolutely did not recommend every single player that came to me, yo, you need to go to college. That wasn't the message for every single player, because some kids, you know, some of these kids had like, you know, 60, 61 averages and they were like failing every class. And, you know, but I would definitely give them what the other options were. Listen, if school is not your thing, the other thing I wasn't doing is telling kids to go into the armed forces. It's just, I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel comfortable telling a kid, you need to go to the service. Because I wouldn't want my kid to be in that situation. So, but we would talk about trade schools. We would talk about the city tests, you know, bus driver, train conductor, the sanitation. Like, I let them know, like, listen, I got friends of mine that graduated or barely graduated from high school. As soon as they got out, they went and took the fireman test, the policeman's test, the sanitation test, and they're going to be 30 years in and have full pensions, and they might be making more money than me down the road, you know. And when you let a young person understand that there are other options, then they don't lose hope. Because a lot of these kids, they graduate, they saying, I hate school, college ain't for me. If I'm not going to be a ball player or a rapper, then I'm done. I'm hopeless. I'm going to be on the corner. And you got to help them understand that those aren't the only options. There's other things that they can do. And you got to help them see the long-term picture. And that's what I've always tried to do, is try to sit down with them and let's talk about where you're going to be in 5 years if you go this route and if you go that route. And when they see it, it helped some of them make the right decisions.
Why did you stop doing that work?
When I moved to Jersey, I was still doing the commute back and forth from Jersey to Brooklyn, which was pretty much the entire school year.
It's two full albums.
Yeah, and so I was not touring while I was coaching. So from pretty much late August all the way until Thanksgiving, that's the football season, I wasn't touring. I was like turning down tours. That job, the coaching job, it pays like nothing. It's like peanuts, you know what I mean? And so it was about 9 years straight of turning down tours, or 11 years straight, really, of turning down tours. And I got to a situation where the school I was at in Jersey wasn't a good fit for me. And so I stepped away because it wasn't a good fit from a coach's standpoint. And I said, well, let me step away. Maybe in a couple years, I'll find a new school, a better fit, and I'll do it again. I believe it's something that I'll go back to at some point because I really enjoyed what I was doing. But I feel like the situation is going to present itself. And in the meantime, I can start really focusing on this music. And so since 2012, I've just been just grinding and doing music.
What was the name of the school in Brooklyn?
Canarsie High School.
And did the kids know about your other careers?
They found out. Some of them found out, and you know, but it was taboo to bring up music around me or to talk to me about music. I wouldn't engage them in anything about my career.
Why is that?
Because once they view you as a rapper,
yeah,
and half of them rap, they almost view you as a peer, and mm-hmm. and now they want to spit verses for you, and I had to keep that clean line of discipline and respect there. I'm not your peer. We not on the same level. We not trading bars. None of that. Like, I'm here to guide you in your life, and I didn't want them to research my career and listen to my music or any of that. I wanted to just focus on football, school, and your future. And I'm very regimented in that way, and that's how I treated them. And they once they saw that I wasn't playing, they respected mm-hmm. it and left it where it was. You know, a few kids come up to me, yo, listen to this. I got this new song. And put the headphones on, and it's my song. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's a nice song. Yeah. Go back to, you know, working out.
See, teenagers are crazy.
Yeah.
Can I jump back a little bit to just the music for a moment?
Yeah, Ali.
I know we're at like 2.5 and we probably got to shut it down.
Yeah, that's what I was going to tell you.
I just wanted to know in terms of, you know, you've worked with so many different people and specifically to, you know, your present group, what has been the key, what do I call it? What has helped you keep the relationship with your group members intact?
Oh, well,
WhatsApp.
No, not just that. We're generally friends, and we respect each other's space. We respect each other's energy. We don't try to get in each other's way. You know what I mean? We had a fourth member that we actually had to remove from the group. So I guess it hasn't been totally perfect. He was the kind of the oddball out. He was the odd man out. He had a different agenda all the time, and everybody else was in harmony, and this fourth person was just on his own thing, and it just didn't work with him. And now that it's just the three of us, it's we're in perfect harmony. Everybody does their thing. Everybody understands their role. Nobody's outside of the realm of, you know, we're always kind of in line with our thinking and our beliefs. And whenever there's a little bit of an issue or something where somebody doesn't quite disagree, we have a conversation about it and we vote on it, you know, and that's what it's supposed to be. I think all of those things, keeping it democratic, I think is a big thing. You know, I don't throw my weight around just because I'm, you know, have the most known name or whatever. I mean, Wordsworth is a great artist in his own right. Strickland is a great lyricist in his own right. But I don't throw my weight around and say, well, what I say goes and this is what it is and y'all got to listen to me. I've never been that way. It's always been democratic, and they've outvoted me on many things. I'd be like, I think we should do this. And the two of them go, nah, I'm not feeling that. I think we should do this. And I'd be like, all right, yeah, that's what it is. That's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I think all of that plays a part in why things work.
Okay. Just a little advice, you know, wanted to get perspective for those other, you know, aspiring artists who are in groups, you know, just to get a taste of it. Because you as a solo artist, you know, you seem like you push for the group, where usually it's the other way around. People in groups and they, like, can't wait to break to, you know, really just focus so much on solo works. So
yeah, I love both, man. I love the group aspect, the energy, and I love when it's my time to do me. I love that too. That's fun too. And I bring those guys with me when I do my solo stuff. They're on the stage with me. I bring one of them usually rolls with me. So,
well, I'm loving the album. It the skits sort of remind me of like early 3 Feet High and Rising.
Yeah, thank you.
And this album it's a good album.
Thank you, man. Spread the word. Help, let people know, man.
Will do.
Thanks, Ali, for calling.
Salute you, legend.
Yo, man, same here. Let's, link up at some point when I don't know how often you come back this way.